Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
It's pain-free Friday. Pharrell's doling out minutes on a mahogany, waxing it up. 100, 200, bad seed, broken egg, bad apple with a bad attitude, hanging around a bunch of bad others, bad taste, bad luck, bad dude, bad breath, bad attention, bad vibes. We are live in the Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loan Studios in New York City. They understand it's not just a mortgage, it's your mortgage. That's the difference. Rocket Mortgage. Push button. Get mortgage. Get your Rocket Mortgage on, son. People dressed in plastic bags, directed traffic, some kind of fashion shake it up should do. All my friends that come around, flood to party up. Rats on the west side, bed bugs up town. What a mess, tons of tatter, and my brains are splattered all over Manhattan. Should do be shake out. Ooh. Are you with us tonight from New York? 855. Oh, my God. I just want to get naked. That is crazy. 212-4227. ACDC. Woo! That's our toll-free hotline brought to you by Geico. Great news. There's a way you can save a bunch of money. Just go to geico.com and switch to Geico. In 15 minutes, you can save 15% or more on your car insurance. Big show tonight for you. Brett Hudson from the Tuscaloosa News. Talking Bama, A&M. We're going to do that coming up here in 9 minutes or so. Jamie Eisenberg at the top of the second hour, 11 East, 8 West. With all your fantasies between the sheets, call up, ladies. I know that you want... Wait a minute. Is this football? All right, football then. Fantasy football, they're telling me on the rundown. Look who it is at Midnight East, Billy Idol, Hour of Love. The Yammer is back again. Mike Yam, Pac-12 Network. Ugh. You can feel it, can't you? We got Nationals cards. Good game tonight. Nats up in the seventh, 1-0. Top half, one out. They got a run early, and they've held on. It's been a chilly night in the city of Budweiser. And then ALCS starts tomorrow in Houston. Yankees will go with Tanaka against Greinke. Can the Yankees get a game in H-Town this weekend? Todd Gurley, doubtful. Talib out for the Rams in their big game against the Niners Sunday in Lipstick City. Other big games. Texans, Chiefs at Arrowhead, Eagles at U.S. Bank against Cousins and the Vikes. Seattle's at the Browns. Will the Niners continue their unexpected start? The Sunday Nighters, Chargers, Steelers. Big weekend in college football. You got the Red River, Oklahoma and Texas. We talked about it last night. Florida, LSU in the Bayou, Death Valley. There's so much more. Wisconsin, Michigan State. Penn State, Iowa, it is Sid Vicious weekend in college football when the leaves start dropping and you can smell people burning them. Earl Thomas got a fine for that hit on Mason Rudolph. He's definitely out of that Steeler game. Also, college football going on tonight. Miami holding on, 7-3 over Virginia, but Virginia to midfield on the move. Rado State, the Rams are leading at Albuquerque against New Mexico, 21-14 at the half. Colorado and Oregon are underway at Outson. And look who's on the board, quack, quack. The Ducks lead at 7-0 early out in Oregon. That's where Mafia is tonight, partying in Portland, watching the game probably. What is Galley? North of Cali. 855-212-4227 gets you benched. Brett Hudson up first from the Tuscaloosa News talking Tide football on the streets in College Station against the Aggies and Kyle Phil. We'll get into it first on a bench.
You're listening to Pharrell on the Bench.
How stupid was that? Did you see the kid Carter for Miami with the headshot in the end zone on the kid?
Not a smart play.
He tried to kill him. I mean, that kid doesn't know where he is now. He's completely concussed, and they're going to throw him out of the game. They got to, right? Look at that. I mean, he tried to kill him. How do you not see that and throw him out of the game?
That is as helmet to helmet as it gets.
If they don't throw him out of the game, this tops last night's pass interference non-call and then the ridiculous, pathetic NFL league office with their joke of a review system on instant replay on pass interference. That was the most pathetic thing I've seen this year in football. And then this thing tonight. Now, the fans here are very upset, but they're stupid, too. And I'm a Canes fan. So how stupid are you as a fan to boo this call or boo that they threw this guy out of the game because he tried to kill him? I mean, he speared him in the head. He took it. The guy's catching a touchdown pass, and he ran at him for 5 yards straight like he was George Atkinson. Did you see that, Carberry? And they're not even throwing him out of the game. Look. Oh, wait. Is he going or not? What is the deal? They're leaving him in the game. He's the captain. They let him stay in the game. I've seen it all. All right, Brett Hudson covers the Tide for the Tuscaloosa News. They're getting ready for a huge game in Kyle Field against A&M on the road in College Station. And he joins us now on CBS Sports Radio. How's it going, Brett?
I'm good, guys. How are y'all?
We're fantastic. Hey, so take me back to the Ole Miss game when that defense allowed almost 500 yards and they gave up 30-plus points. And then like they all said, like they won the game, they put up 59, but they all treated it like it was the most miserable performance that they'd had at Alabama defensively in a long time.
Yeah, well, I mean, Nick Saban is a defensive guy. That's his background, and that's obviously going to be where his biggest focus is. And I think the thing that they were most focused about in that performance is tempo, or at least how long the defense was on the field. Ole Miss ran 86 plays in that game. And then if you look at the South Carolina game 2 weeks prior, South Carolina ran 88. So they're very concerned about how long their defense is on the field these days. I don't think that's going to be an issue against Jimbo Fisher's offense this weekend, because he runs a very slow, methodical, old school, quote unquote, pro style offense. So I don't anticipate play count being an issue for the Alabama defense this week, but it has been in the past, and it's openly consider making some changes to what's been a very high octane explosive offense to this point, just to help a defense that's been on the field for way too long, in Nick Saban's opinion.
So are they starting four freshmen up front, and are they worried at all that their defense will be the thing that brings them down?
They are starting four in the front. They've got two freshmen, DJ Dale at nose guard, and then the other defensive end position, it could be either one of two freshmen. It could be Justin Aboigbe or Byron Young. Currently it's Byron Young, or at least that's what it was in practice all week. And then the two inside linebackers are also true freshmen, Shane Lee and Christian Harris. So that's an issue for them, and it's something that opposing offenses are pretty clearly going to attack for the duration of the season. What happens now is how those guys develop mentally, how much of the scheme they can take on, because everybody at Alabama is pretty clear about the fact that this is a simplified version of the offense because there are so many freshmen out there. So it's a matter of how well they execute that and how much more they can add to the scheme to present different things to the LSUs, the Auburns, and potentially the Georgias and Clemsons of the world.
Our Brett Hudson covers the Tide for the Tuscaloosa News with us. Are the veterans on that defense, are they bringing the kids along? Do you feel like that they're getting better and that when these games start ramping up at a higher level, like this is a big road game for them any way you slice it. I know they're way better than A&M, but that's a dangerous place to go with a bunch of freshmen playing that are, you know, frankly, not stopping anybody. I know they outscore everybody and score 60, but at some point or another, if you can't stop anybody, it becomes an issue. Are those veterans getting through to these kids?
They're trying, but it's tough because there isn't really a ton of veteran presence at the positions where you're your freshman heavy. I mean, the two freshmen on the inside, they're backed up by a sophomore, Ale Cajo, who transferred in from Washington, so he's not necessarily experienced in the Alabama way. There's really one proven veteran presence on the defensive line, that's Raekwon Davis, and a lot of the veteran experience on this defense is on the back end, and safety Xavier McKinney and defensive backs Shaheen Carter, Patrick Surtain II, Trayvon Diggs, and they've certainly taken leadership roles within the entirety of the defense, but when it gets to the granular position-by-position things, these freshmen, they got no choice but to, I mean, they aren't obviously on their own. They've got excellent coaching staffs and veteran leadership around them, but they kind of got to figure it out on their own. And Nick Saban mentioned that he kind of changed up practice a little bit, or at least he did in the bye week. They did a lot of walkthrough, 11-on-11 walkthrough, just so those freshmen could see a bunch of different concepts and see a bunch of different things without wearing them out by forcing them to go full contact or really run to defend something on every single play. So that's kind of Alabama's most recent idea in terms of getting these freshmen along in the scheme. But I think you kind of mentioned it earlier, in the back of the fan base's mind, there is the question if this defense is going to be this team's downfall relative to the national championship aspirations.
Brett Hudson covers the Bama football team for the Tuscaloosa News with us on the bench. This game is obviously an issue at hand, but then I think they get a nice break with that Tennessee-Arkansas back-to-back going into the LSU game on the 9th of November, and that's going to be huge. And they're obviously in Tuscaloosa for that game, and that's just going to be a hell of a football game any way you slice it. But the next couple weeks, seems like they got a nice little window to get ready for that game, no doubt about it.
Yeah, I agree. Tennessee and Arkansas, it is. I mean, those programs are what they are right now. They're pretty significant downslides, and especially with the season being set on the calendar the way it is, where you have two open weeks in the regular season. Alabama kind of approached this most recent open week that they had last week to kind of take little bits and pieces to prepare for Texas A&M, Arkansas, and Tennessee before they have that next open week going into that closing stretch with LSU, Auburn, Mississippi State, and Western Carolina pretty obviously being the odd man out in that particular schedule configuration. But when you look at the schedule, I think you've hit the nail on the head. If they can get through this task, they have arguably two of the worst five programs in the SEC coming to Tuscaloosa before their bye week going into the LSU game. So if they get up to a solid halftime lead in this game, they'll go 10 quarters without being challenged. That's my opinion anyway.
Yeah, you're right. And Tua's been ripping it up, 76%, 23 TDs. I mean, has he done anything at all different? Is he better now? Is he the same guy that you've been covering from last year to this year? Do you think he's actually making strides at getting even better?
Yeah, I think it's something that like the scouts, or maybe scouts would notice it, but the average fan might not notice this, but he's trying to be more risk averse, I guess. Like, he's still going to take shots down the field when his wide receivers have advantageous one-on-ones, and when your wide receivers are as talented as these guys are, almost every one-on-one is going to be advantageous. But the phrase we've heard him use several times is, you can't go broke taking a profit. He's not going to force things downfield, which he definitely would have at times last year. He's not going to stand in the pocket for that extra second and take a sack just hoping to get a chance to unleash a ball 30 yards down the field. He will take short routes. He will take stuff in the quick game, in the intermediate game, and frankly, that's better for the offense overall. It's better for Tua because it gets the ball out of his hand quickly, but it's better for the offense overall because this wide receiver group is so good that they can turn 8-yard slant into 75-yard touchdowns. We've seen that happen several times this season, and I imagine that's going to continue, especially against an A&M defense where the secondary is probably the weakness of the unit.
What do you think of this kid, Smith, the receiver? He's lighting it up. He's got more TDs than Judy, who everybody's got in the top 10 in the NFL draft.
Yeah, I think that's kind of part of the wide receiver group at Alabama this year, where People are going to look at mock drafts, and Jerry Jeudy is rightfully so, rated among the top 10 guys in the 2020 draft if he chooses to go out, which we assume he will. But that's kind of the nature of this Alabama wide receiving corps, what makes it so hard to defend. If you took one of the four, and the four, by the way, are Jerry Jeudy, Devontae Smith, Henry Ruggs III, and Jaylen Waddle. If you took one of the four out, like if one of them were to get injured or be suspended or whatever, it would still be a deadly receiving corps because the other three are just as good as the one that they're missing. It's frankly impossible with Alabama's receiving corps right now. I'm kind of waiting for someone to dedicate themselves to stopping the pass and force Alabama to run on light boxes. And I realize that's kind of a backwards, bizarro world statement, given what the Nick Saban Alabama programs were built on for many, many years in the past. But these wide receivers are just too good. There are so few so few programs in the country that can go one-on-one with these wide receivers. And I think it's very safe to say that Alabama is not going to see one until they face LSU, if LSU has the ability to go one-on-one with them. I think that's very much in question. If LSU can't, and Auburn can't, they might have to wait until potentially seeing a Clemson again. It's just the nature of the wide receiving corps this year.
I love that a couple guys on that defense either way. McKinney's been incredible all over the field making plays, and then I think he's had a couple picks or something. And then that kid, Anfernee Jennings, with all of his sacks, he's been a monster. Those two have stood out to me.
Yeah, Anfernee's a feel-good story. He and he really, both of the outside linebackers, he and Terrell Lewis, have both had their issues with injuries in the past. Terrell more than Anfernee, but you're seeing healthy versions of both of them right now, and both of them are terrorizing pockets. Anfernee specifically, he's been really unleashed this year because he's been an every down guy at the jack position for Alabama, to the point that Bama's kind of given him some 3-2-6 dime responsibilities because he's just been so good. He's someone that it's hard to justify taking him off the field, and his numbers suggest that. And if the season ended today, I don't think there's any doubt that Xavier McKinney is an All-American safety. That's the level he's playing at right now. And something he doesn't get enough credit for is he's able to move around. You know, there are holes, not holes, but there are spots in this secondary where they aren't as experienced as Nick Saban would like them to be, where you're seeing Jared Maiden and Jordan Battle and, to a lesser extent, Shaheen Carter, put in positions that are only advantageous to them. So Xavier McKinney kind of moves around the secondary to make sure that those guys are comfortable where they are on the field. And he has to put a lot on his plate in that regard. He deserves a lot of credit for, not only for being able to handle all the different responsibilities within the secondary, but also being able to execute all of them at what, to, in my opinion, has been All-American level thus far.
Great stuff, Brett. Brett Hudson with the Tuscaloosa News. Enjoy the game at Kyle Field. Should be a good one, 3:30 East tomorrow. Thanks for coming on CBS Sports Radio tonight.
Thanks for having me, guys.
All right, Brett Hudson with the Tuscaloosa News.
Welcome to Play It, a new podcast network featuring radio and TV personalities talking business, sports, tech, entertainment, and more. Play it at play.it.
So everybody's talking about it. Everybody's doing it. They just won't admit it. PharrellOnTheBench.com rules. It's the best site for picks. All the college and pro picks are up for this weekend's games. UFC action is going on Saturday night. Baseball. You got the ALCS tomorrow night. More of the NLCS over the weekend on Sunday. Hockey, blowout Saturday night, tons of games. Hoops is coming. The regular season's about 11 days away or so. Try it. You'll like it. PharrellOnTheBench.com. Sign up today. Hide the money from your wife. Did you see this disturbing story? I don't know if you saw it, about the college. Pierce College is investigating a situation where the football coach reportedly forced 30 players to live in a three-bedroom apartment.
What?
What? What is going on? I mean, honestly, what is happening there? Oh, look at this. Look at this guy going hizzy. Is he going to make it? Oh, hand it off to your boy. Look at him running over number 24. He ran with that. He ran on that guy like a horse. He carried him for 15 yards. Anyway, listen to this. The report also says that four more students lived in the team's locker room. The situation arose allegedly because the coach promised to recruits before the fall semester. The promises included housing for his new players, and he never secured the housing. A former player described the situation, saying the coach originally told four or five players they would share a three-bedroom apartment and split all of the bills. How do they pay for the bills? The college football players at Pierce College. I didn't even know they had a program. He promised actual living space, and it ended up being like a jail with how many people were living in that apartment. The lines that he crossed, 30 guys in the three-bedroom, and almost half of his recruits wouldn't pay rent and bills wouldn't be paid. They were ultimately evicted and forced to find somewhere else to live. So, apparently, one of them said to the coach, "I feel it's best if we go in a different direction. I'm out of here." Then they put the coach on temporary leave while the investigation is conducted. They hope to name a new head coach soon. What is going on there? I mean,
that's a bizarre one right
there. That is just not acceptable, right?
30 dudes in a three-bedroom apartment.
And he told them to split the bills. Split it up.
I mean, it couldn't be that much if there was 30 of them splitting the bills, right?
What does that, 10 to a room? There's three-bedroom.
Well, I mean, you figure probably you use the living room. You know,
floor.
Yeah, I mean, there's
hallway,
probably, you could make, get creative.
Kitchen.
What the team? What was the
bathroom? Someone living in the bathtub.
What was the team's record this year?
It didn't say anything about the team's
record. What's their name? What's the school's name?
Pierce College. I think it's in California. It's just not a good scene. That does not sound healthy either. If one guy gets a cold, the whole apartment gets it.
The in-state tuition is $1,200.
1,200 per semester?
No, for the year.
Oh, for the whole year?
That's like 600 a semester.
Every kid that goes to school around here costs you 300 grand. These kids are really getting a great education out there.
I mean, to be fair, I mean, you know, they started 0-4.
Have they won a couple
and they,
that
and
rattled
just,
off
they just
a couple?
Won last week, so all this stuff comes out after a big win.
You think the NARC would have, you know, done it early on in, like, week three?
They lost 62-26 in week two. That must have been a rough week at the house.
At the apartment. When they turned the power off.
In all seriousness, though, I mean, that is just absolutely ridiculous. I mean, what are they doing?
Can you imagine, like, how does the coach explain himself? How do you respond to these allegations, coach? Listen, there was no housing. I had to do what I had to do. In fact, I let a couple of them live in my VW Bug. I have a camper out in the back, and they live out there in an RV. And then there's a couple that live by an old rusted out one down by the river. On government trees. Can you imagine, like,
got an old garage in the back. They use the hose for drinking water.
Now, I read a story the other day about all these people where I live. Not, you know, where I live, but like in the general area, there's some people that live out in this, you know, fancy, high-end suburbs, right? Where literally some of these clowns have turned their garages into bars. Have you heard about that?
Now, that's a good idea.
So people are, like, converting, instead of man caves now, they're converting garages into literally bars, like their own bar. So they don't sell booze because you need a liquor license to do that, right? And like a bar or a store. So these bars are just free beer and booze and wine. So they have it just to have parties. So their buddies come over and they have like a, you know, they watch football and they come into the garage and they got a bar in there and then they just get hammered. They get like kegs in there, the whole deal. They got every, you know, 50 bottles of beer, the whole deal. And there's like people competing. They're like having these, you know, competitions to see who has the best bar in their, you know, garage. I saw the story in the paper about all these guys with their fancy garage bars, and I'm like, what is happening here in the neighborhood that we don't know about? What are the women up to? You got these guys making, you know, bars. Maybe the women. You think there's some brothel activity going on maybe in some of the houses?
Anything can happen.
I know. I've heard there's, what do they call them, swinger parties? And then how about the car key parties? Have you seen those where they all throw their keys in a bowl and you just end up with whoever you grab their keys and that's who you go home with?
I hadn't seen that one.
That one's another one going on out there with these rich people.
It's a key party.
Yeah, have you heard about that?
Yeah, they're called key parties, yeah.
So I'm not doing anything like that.
Well, that has Pharrell, like, 20 years ago written all over it.
I've done all kinds of crazy things and kooky things and kinky as well. But I have done that, actually. I have done some very kinky things over the years, come to think of it. Some of which I'm very proud of, I have to say. Oh, and then he fumbles. Did you see this guy get sacked and fumble?
He looked like he was getting away from it, too. He dodged like three guys, and then, right, boom, he didn't see the fourth guy coming. How do you not get the ball, though, if you're How do you not get the ball?
I think the guy's terrible, this Virginia quarterback. Well,
we watched him play Notre Dame 2 weeks ago when we were out in L.A.
He's all over
and
the
He made some plays, but then he also made so many mistakes.
Right. He's just all over the place is literally the problem. But this game is 10-6. Kane's up, 8 minutes to go, fourth. They did throw the guy out, Carter, out of the game.
I think that in college it's an automatic ejection. I'm pretty sure when you get a target.
Well, did you see what he did after he did it? Did you see what he did?
He stayed on the field.
He wouldn't leave. He wouldn't leave the field. And then they told him to get off the field, and he wouldn't leave. And then he stand in the end zone or something and, like, have some kind of protest or something?
So they got another flag, illegal substitution.
They got another flag, and then they walked him out of the tunnel. Nothing worse than the brother who thinks he's not going to listen to the refs that kick him out of the game for targeting and spearing. And then he's, like, going to have a moment of reflection and a protest. He's going to have a NFL kneel protest. He's not going to leave the field. He had his own little action going there, like his like anti-ref moment. Did you see him like standing in the end zone? Like, I didn't do it. What are you talking about? I'm not going anywhere. Screw you. They're like, actually, no, screw you. You're going to the locker room. You're done for the night. And then how about the fans? How pathetic are you? And I'm a Canes fan. That's my team. But honestly, I'm embarrassed for you people. You're sitting there cheering on a guy that's literally tried to decapitate a kid. That was the dirtiest spearing I've seen in a month. Like, literally, because you see it every week, right? Some guy diving with his head first, trying to take somebody's head off. But that was clear and blatant, felonious spearing. And he tried to kill him. Tried to kill him, and then the fans are booing the call. Like, it was pathetic. Like, let's face it, if you're busted trying to kill somebody on the football field with a targeting, spearing headshot, and you dive 5 yards in the air to take his head off and lead with your helmet, how do you cheer that on as a fan, even if it's your team? How do you sit there? Don't you just, like, not cheer and just shut up and just stand there and go, can you believe he just did that? I think that's a good time to go get a beer. When they're reviewing the targeting, you run to get a beer because you don't want to be the guy that's spotted on national television cheering on the guy that tried to kill some other kid.
I can't believe he was standing there thinking that.
He didn't do it.
He didn't do anything wrong. Like, he jacked the guy up.
His whole scene was stupid. Like, the spearing was stupid. His protest was stupid. Then he denied it was the culpability. That was stupid. So the bottom line is Carter's just a stupid guy. So let's be clear. It was Carter that did it. The captain of the team, Carter. Did I mention Carter, that he did it?
Carter did it.
Well, that he was stupid? Did I mention that? The stupid-ass Carter? All right, we got it under control.
Are you saying Carter or Carver?
Carter, not Carver. Carver's not stupid. Carter is.
Just making sure.
What now? All right, here we go. Coming up here is Jamie Eisenberg. Top of the hour, start calling now, 855-212-4227 with all your fantasy questions. Who to start, who to sit, who to deal. You're crappy at running your fantasy team. Haven't you noticed yet that you suck at it? Jamie doesn't suck. You do. Jamie is way better than you. Call him, Solve your problems. It's real simple. We do as many calls as we get, so hit the phones now. 855-212-4227. This is Frill on the Bench on CBS Sports Radio.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can waste another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can conquer it. I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. Any road. The steeper, the better. Because my all-new Santa Fe is available with H-Track all-wheel drive, so I can hit the trail without a worry in the world. Heck, with three rows and best-in-class rear cargo space, I can pack the whole family in with all our gear. We've got available dual wireless charging for our phones, so we'll never lose touch with civilization, and we won't lose touch with the primordial power of Mother Earth. So which is it? Waste the weekend or do something a little more epic and conquer it in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.